Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Holistic Nootropics Podcast. My name is Eric. I'm a functional nutritional therapy practitioner and the founder of HolisticNootropics.com. Today on the podcast, we have my good friend, Holly Fisher Higgins, who is also a functional nutritional therapy practitioner, and she's also a rapid transformational therapy coach, along with a health coach. And essentially what she does is use food and nutrition to help her clients and to help people get their minds right, to optimize their mental wellness, which is what we do here at HolisticNootropics.com or Holistic Nootropics, all the platforms. That's what we're doing here at Holistic Nootropics. That's what we're about, using food, supplements, nutrition, lifestyle, diet to help you get your mind right. So this was a real fun talk with Holly. She's a really, really great coach. If you're interested in checking out her services, be sure to check out her podcast, again, MindSpeak, or her website, hollyfisherhiggins.com. For more information on nootropics and holistic ways of using diet and lifestyle to optimize your brain function and your mental health, be sure to check out holisticnootropics.com. Subscribe to the Holistic Nootropics YouTube page, where we're putting up a lot of new videos every single week. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast right here, Holistic Nootropics, for so far it seems like weekly podcast, but maybe we might step that up and do two a week. I don't want to make any promises, but you know how it is. Sometimes you get super motivated and you just start putting out content. But the best place to go, again, holisticnootropics.com and the Holistic Nootropics YouTube page. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Enjoy the interview with my good friend, Holly Fisher Higgins. Holly Fisher Higgins is here on the Holistic Nootropics podcast. Holly, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for joining me today. Holly is a nutritional therapy practitioner and RTT hypnotherapist whose work focuses on holistic mental and mind-body connection. She enjoys helping her clients and followers understand the link between food and mood while harnessing the power of intentional thought and belief. In addition to one-on-one and group coaching, Holly enjoys sharing knowledge via Instagram and her podcast, MindSpeak, which is a doozy. I personally love it. In 2018, she was named the number two influential health coach by Mark Sisson's Primal Health Coach Institute. She regularly contributes to leading health publication and lives in Asheville, North Carolina with her husband, Sean. Holly, is there anything I missed there that you would like to let us know before we dive deep into what's going on with you?
I think that's the brief version of my life story. So let's go into the full version.
So here on the Holistic Nootropics podcast, we talk a lot about mental health, which is why I wanted to have you on the podcast, because I think, you know, the way that you talk about mental health is the way that I really try to help people understand what mental health is, which is really kind of supporting this mind-body connection idea. So
absolutely.
So what is your approach to this whole kind of holistic mental health, mind-body thing?
Yeah. So I don't think we can look at the mind as its own thing. You know, when I was in the depths of my struggle, I imagined my head as this little black balloon that was floating above my body. And I definitely bought into the story that the mind and the body are separate. You're doomed to genetic predispositions and family history. And the only thing that you can do is take a pill and go talk about it in therapy and cross your fingers and hope for the best, but really just kind of manage your way through the rest of life. That was the old story that I believed. And through my own healing and my own finding, what I discovered over time is that the mind and the body are inextricably linked. And the most profound healing that I found in terms of my own mental health was actually through interventions with my body. Changing my nutrition was one of the biggest impacts, one of the biggest movers of the needle. And so I think when we look at mental health through a holistic lens, we really need to consider the whole person, their mind, their body, their social connections. Do they have a sense of purpose? All of the things, because if you look at a person in a vacuum, they're not really ever going to be able to achieve full healing.
I agree. And that's really the letdown of the allopathic medical system. You know, all of this psychiatry and psychology, you know, these psychiatric therapists. You know, you lay on somebody's couch, you tell them about your week or whatever, you tell them about your family, you tell them about your relationships. And no matter what the story is, they're still going to give you a pill. And the pill is built to just go to your brain and move some things around so that you start producing neurotransmitters that can manipulate your mood. But really, you're missing 98% of the rest of the story, is what I've noticed.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
So do you have a history yourself of not being in this world of, you know, honoring the body to honor the mind?
Definitely. I always say, you know, if you would have told me 10 or 15 years ago, you're going to be a nutritionist one day, you're going to be a hypnotherapist one day, I would have laughed my butt off, because I was always the person pounding burgers and beer and ice cream and eating whatever I wanted. And, you know, I definitely did not crawl out of the womb espousing holistic principles and holistic mental wellness. It was through my own struggle that I ended up here, a pretty severe struggle with depression, anxiety, technically 10 diagnosed mood disorders, although I don't really believe in diagnoses. I believe that diagnoses are just an indicative of you have symptoms, and we're going to fit these symptoms into a box, but they don't ask why you have the symptoms. So why I'm here today is definitely because of my own personal struggle.
And what was your personal struggle like? Like, what did you experience, you know, that really kind of brought you to that place of saying, I'm done with this, no more, I'm going to change things?
Mm-hmm. So I had suffered my entire life with like low to mid grade depression and anxiety, but I never really sought help for it until my mid 20s. It was something I always just kind of sucked it up and dealt with it and pretended like everything was okay. You know, I had a tremendous amount of childhood trauma that I never really dealt with. And then in my mid 20s, everything really just kind of came crashing down. I had a pretty severe mental health breakdown. I couldn't get out of bed. I was really starting to struggle at work. I was drinking a bottle of wine a night. I had really, really intense, panicky, racy anxiety coupled with just like debilitating, I hate my life, what's the point, depression. And so eventually it got bad enough to where I sought help. You know, first I saw a therapist, and after just a couple of sessions of being in her office, she was like, I really think you probably need to see a psychiatrist too. This is pretty severe. We want to get you stabilized. And so I started seeing a psychiatrist and going through the lottery of medications. First it was Zoloft, and then that stopped working. And then we added another one. And then I got another diagnosis on top of existing diagnoses. And then, you know, change prescriptions. And it always just felt like a game of whack-a-mole of, you know, talking to my psychiatrist, talking to my therapist. Between the two of them, I had 10 different mental health diagnoses ranging from depression, anxiety, agoraphobia, social anxiety, impulse control disorder. I mean, I can't even remember all the labels they slapped on me. And it was just this whack-a-mole game of going in and regurgitating my past to my therapist, which actually felt worse. It didn't make me feel better. It just sort of felt like, you know, putting salt in the wound every week, and then going to my psychiatrist and, you know, having her pontificate about, you know, what she thought I had, and having her give me new pills to try and take these away and let's try this one. And it was just exhausting. And over the course of my treatment, I gained over 60 pounds in the course of just a year and a half. So, you know, I was no longer suicidal, but I had emotionally flatlined. I felt like a complete zombie. My original careers in the creative arts, I was a writer, you know, I worked in ad agencies as a creative writer. And I lost all my creativity. I lost all my zest for life. You know, I was no longer super duper sad, but I could no longer experience happiness or joy either. It was this total emotional flatlining, you know, gained a ton of weight, and just got to this point where I realized this, you know, traditional mental health model treadmill that I was running on if I kept running on that treadmill, I saw myself running to my death. And I say that and I don't exaggerate. I was just exaggerating. I was getting heavier and heavier. I was feeling more and more placid. And so at that point, it really, I was most upset about my weight. Because to gain 60 pounds in just a year and a half is really unsettling. And I didn't recognize who I was anymore. And so I started trying all these different things to lose weight, you know, everything you can think of, and nothing was working. My weight wasn't budging. And I finally stumbled across what's essentially a 30-day paleo challenge. And I thought, what the heck, I'm going to give this a try. And it was the only thing I tried that not only enabled me to lose weight, because I did lose weight on it, but by the end of 30 days, I noticed, wait, I feel, is that happiness? I think I feel happy. What's going on? And so I started Googling, you know, is there a connection between nutrition and mental health? And there wasn't a lot on the internet back then. Like Kelly Brogan was just sort of getting started, you know, with being more public about her message. And I found a little bit, and but the fact that I did find anything at all made me really, well, it really validated me. And I was also really angry, because I was like, if there was a connection between nutrition and mental health, and this connection made such a profound difference in my own healing, how come nobody ever suggested this to me before? How come nobody, no practitioner or doctor along my treatment path had ever suggested to me, hey, maybe you need to take a look at your nutrition. Maybe you need to like eat some protein. and so I just really felt this calling at that point that I needed to get this information into as many hands as possible. So I went back, I studied with the NTA. I became a nutrition practitioner myself. And ever since then, you know, I've been helping clients and have been spreading the message about the connection between nutrition and mental health, because it's such a huge factor. And if you're going along the traditional treatment path, the likelihood of anybody ever telling you about the importance of nutrition is very, very slim.
Yeah. I mean, mostly because it's in nobody's bottom line to do that.
Totally.
Nobody makes money by telling people that about the connection. And to be fair, I don't know if most, you know, normal MDs or pharmacists even know, you know, maybe they've heard like, oh, if you eat right and exercise, you feel better. But I mean, there's actual science specifically stating these different connections between what's happening in your body and the way that your neurotransmitters work in your brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, everybody knows at a basic level, if you eat right and you exercise, you'll feel better. Like that's just a very basic platitude, but the connection, you know, as you and I know, between nutrition and mental health goes so, so deep. And, you know, to my doctors and all my practitioners' credit, like I'm sure none of them were educated on the link between nutrition and mental health, and they can't teach what they don't know. But for me, my anger was like directed at the system, like the system is screwed up because the system is not teaching us about these things. So
what was it then? Cause I'm curious, you say you gained 60 pounds in a year and a half. I'm curious, like what actually, like how did that happen? And then when you did the 30-day paleo challenge, like how did your diet change? How did your lifestyle change? Do these pharmaceutical drugs, do they put weight on you, or do they kind of like take over your mind and turn you more emotionally to food or lack of exercise, or how does that happen?
That's a really good question, and it's kind of twofold. And in terms of psych drugs and how they work, if you really dive into the literature on psych drugs, there's a lot of unknown mechanisms and unknown actions where, you know, even doctors and pharmacists can't tell you exactly how they work. But the two biggest trends that I notice, you know, both in myself and having worked with a lot of people who have gone through this, is there's something about psych drugs that causes the body to hold weight and to put on weight. You know, this doesn't happen for everybody. You know, there are lots of people who take psych drugs and they don't gain weight, but particularly SSRIs, one of the quote unquote side effects that they have, meaning the effects. I don't really believe in side effects. It's like, no, it's an effect. It
happens. That's the effect. Yeah.
That's the effect. One of the effects of particularly SSRIs is they can cause people to put on weight at a very rapid pace. And again, the exact mechanism, the exact action of how and why that happens. I'm sure there's several different theories out there. You know, it could have to do with, you know, detoxification pathways and things like that. I can't tell you the exact reason of why, but SSRIs in particular, and even some mood stabilizers are very, they're known to cause people to put on weight. But the other thing that many people find is when they are on SSRIs, mood stabilizers, other types of psych drugs, is that very often cravings for sugar and simple carbohydrates increase dramatically. And I do remember, I mean, I had been kind of an emotional eater before I got on psych meds. I would eat a lot of ice cream. I'd drink a lot of wine. But I do remember after I got on psych meds, my sugar cravings definitely increased. But as I was going along the path, and you know, there was a point where I was gaining like literally a pound a week, if not more. I had tried to like rein in my eating and not eat as much sugar and just make more like basic healthy choices. And even doing that while I was still on the psych meds, I continued to gain weight. So I don't think it was just the fact that they made me crave. There's something about psych meds that just caused my body in particular to hold on to store weight, to gain weight. So.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's like you said, even the doctors who are prescribing, like they don't know how this works. You know, it's like, they don't know what the full spectrum of effects are, you know, especially when you start messing with something like an SSRI, where the whole point of it is to turn off enzymes that, you know, get that metabolize things like serotonin. It's like, you're messing with a major part of the brain, and there's all of these other receptors in the brain that, well, if the serotonin molecule, you know, can't get metabolized and out, it's just going to go find another place. And then, you know, one of the effects of that, not side effects, but main effects, is that you get more depression. You get, you know, some people turn full on bipolar, schizophrenic. It's like, there's just a whole field of receptors for these molecules to get into. And it's, and then doctors just give it to you, you know, it's crazy to me that it's so careless in that way. You know, it's like, it's almost kind of as sloppy as like, you know, being a plumber and then having no idea how a toilet works. You know, it's like, I don't know. You just press the thing and the water goes there and that's what it's supposed to do. And if it doesn't do that, I don't know why it doesn't do that.
Exactly. There's what also comes to mind for me is the analogy of the human body, which includes the mind, as a spider web. And when you tug on one corner of that web, the whole web is going to move. When you tug on one little strand of the spider web, the whole web is going to move. So it's, you know, they're pulling some strands up there in the brain, these prescriptions anyway, and we don't know the long-term effects.
Yeah, we don't. Well, we're finding out.
yeah, we're finding out, but it's also very unpredictable, highly unpredictable. People have such different responses to going on psych meds, coming off of psych meds. For some people, withdrawal is a cakewalk and they're able to get off super easily. For other people like myself, withdrawal is a living nightmare. So they're just a very unpredictable class of drugs.
Yeah. So when you did your paleo challenge, like what was that like, and how did it affect you? Like, was it difficult? Was it something that you dreaded doing? Was there kind of like a withdrawal from the safe, you know, from kind of like that safe place of falling back onto the prescription drugs? Were you still on the pharmaceuticals when you started the paleo challenge, or?
I had come off of a couple and I was still in the process of withdrawing. So I think I had come off of Lamictal, which is a mood stabilizer, but I was in the process of withdrawing from SSRIs. And the details get a little fuzzy to me because this was back in 2014, but I reached this rock bottom line in the sand place where, like I said, I had that vision of myself running on a treadmill, running toward my death. And so I didn't approach my diet change from a place of like, this is hard and this is inconvenient. And, you know, things that I hear from people a lot, like, why me? I hate eating healthy. I was like, dead set on changing my life. And so I came at it from a very, very empowered place of like, I'm taking back my life. I'm doing whatever it takes. I don't care what it takes. I'm just miserable and I need to change. And so there were definitely parts and times where it was really hard and I wanted to fall back into the convenience option and I was having sugar withdrawals and I felt a little sorry for myself and my coworkers picked on me and teased me for having super healthy food. And I did go through all of that, but underlying that, and I think why I was ultimately successful is I just had this fire of like, this is it. Like I'm doing whatever it takes to change. No more of the old story.
So what were the foods or the supplements that you were consuming to kind of help you with that?
Yeah. Well, if we want to talk about supplements, I have been on so many different protocols over so many years.
Yeah. So well, dish them out, baby. That's what we're here for.
Oh my gosh. Initially I wasn't pursuing supplementation at all. I hadn't gone down the rabbit hole of like functional medicine or like really deep into functional nutrition. But initially it was just that paleo challenge. I had eliminated grains and dairy and sugar. And, you know, I was focusing on pastured meats and veggies and healthy fats and nuts and seeds and some fruit and things like that. So initially it was all just dietary. It wasn't until a few months later that I was in nutrition school and I also started working with a nutritionist because I had symptoms of adrenal fatigue, HPA axis dysfunction set in. And that's really, really common, especially when somebody is pursuing a medication taper from psych meds. The body is doing all sorts of rebalancing and recalibrating. There's also, you know, in my opinion, a lot of unknowns happening with the body recalibrating from psych meds. And so about like 6 months into this lifestyle change, I just started feeling like I hit a wall. And so initially in terms of my supplementation journey, I was focusing a lot on the adrenal health side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. On our channel, you know, I talk a lot about the connection specifically between the adrenals and mental health. I mean, cause you really think about it. It's like, I mean, that's how you feel, you know, when you feel that in the morning and you don't want to get out of bed. I know so many people who label that depression, but really what it could be. And I mean, I'm no doctor, I'm not here to diagnose anybody, but that could very well be a form of adrenal fatigue. In fact, I'd be willing to bet money that it probably is. In some ways.
I totally agree. And going back to my story of when I was initially diagnosed with all of these things, I think only one of my diagnoses was correct, and that is PTSD. And Mastin Kipp, I don't know if you're familiar with him, says we need to change it to PTSR, post-traumatic stress response. Mm-hmm. Because when we live in a state of chronic stress, you know, I had chronic stress. I had a really crazy childhood. That chronic stress over time, it breaks down the body, it wears on the mind, and that chronic stress leads to all of these symptoms. And I have not met a single person who has been diagnosed with any sort of depression or anxiety who doesn't have adrenal dysfunction. Of course. My depression label that I was given was absolutely adrenal dysfunction as a result of chronic stress and burnout.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, your adrenals make your hormones, right? Or they make a lot of your hormones, and especially hormones like, you know, testosterone, estrogen, DHEA, all of those, right? I mean, those are hormones you feel that can contribute to your feelings throughout the day. So yeah, absolutely. Adrenal health is so important in mental health.
Mm-hmm. So that was one of the very first things that I started addressing. And when I work with my clients now, it's one of the very first things. I mean, blood sugar balance, adrenal health, one of the very first things I address with my clients, because especially with depressive symptoms, anxiety symptoms too, the adrenals are always at play.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Not to mention it, I'm willing to bet that most people on the standard American diet. I mean, it's just inherent. If you are consuming a standard American diet, you're filled up with carbs. You're filled up with sugar. It's like, I just remember, you know, like when I lived in New York, especially, it's like you just, walk down the street and there's just carbs everywhere. You know, you look in any window, if you're at a bakery, I mean, there's so many bakeries around and coffee shops, even like diners and restaurants, they put the carbs, the muffins, the bagels, the croissants, the bread, the all, you know, you go to the grocery store at the checkout line, it's all candy bars, you know, because they know it's like you want some of this before you leave. So of course, everybody's over consuming sugar, and that directly goes into, and we know this as NTPs, this plays directly into your adrenals and your HPA axis.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's the kind of stuff that I was eating, you know, before I changed my diet. I loved carbs. I loved cinnamon rolls. I loved ice cream. I loved sugar.
Yeah.
And I was living on that blood sugar roller coaster. And you know, my ADD diagnosis, my bipolar type 2 diagnosis, that was imbalanced blood sugar. I was unstable and I couldn't focus and I had brain fog and I felt like a spaz because my blood sugar was all over the place. Once right. I got that stabilized, I didn't have those symptoms anymore.
Right. So then to stabilize, were you doing like a high fat diet?
So I have vacillated with like my fat and carb intake, like in the earlier stages of my healing journey, when I was more insulin resistant, I was doing much more of a low carb, higher fat approach. I found as I've healed, as I've become more insulin sensitive, I'm actually a lot more tolerant to carbohydrate than I used to be. So now mm-hmm. I would say I eat like a moderate carbohydrate diet. But in the initial phases of my healing journey, I did focus pretty darn low carb.
Yeah. Carbs get a really bad rap, and I'm one to give them a bad rap. But at the same time, you know, when you start giving up carbs, you really are in a way throwing the baby out with the bathwater, because, you know, a lot of carbs have a lot of nutrition and, mm-hmm. you know, you need some of that stuff, right? Like if you're saying like, I'm going to give up all carbs, well, you know, sweet potatoes got a lot of good stuff. Blueberries got a lot of good stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like finding that balance really.
Right. Right. And there was a point in time, also just with like my tastes and what my body was craving and probably what the bugs in my gut were craving, where I felt like I couldn't be trusted around carbs. Like I would just eat all the carbs in sight.
Sure.
And now I'm at the point where like I can have some, I can be satiated. I find it actually really helps with my blood sugar balance and stability to have a balance of those macronutrients. But like I said earlier on in the healing journey with gut dysbiosis, with insulin resistance, all of that stuff, the lower carb approach was very, very helpful.
Yeah. That's amazing. So then at what point did you start incorporating supplements in to help with this whole transition?
Yeah, like I said, I really probably started really getting serious about supplementation probably about 6 months after I changed my diet. And I started really noticing, so I was pursuing a taper. So my body was adjusting to the medication taper. And then I went to see a functional nutritionist to talk about supplementation because I really felt those adrenal fatigue symptoms creeping in. And so it was about 6 months into my journey, I started, you know, I saw a functional nutritionist. I have been down every holistic healing rabbit hole, like every holistic healing rabbit hole you can imagine, I've been in it. So I've seen nutritionists, I've seen functional medicine practitioners, I've seen energy workers. So if you want to talk about like the journey of my supplementation, it was a very, very long one, trying very, very many different things.
Well, what stuck? Was there any supplement or nutrient that really was like, oh, okay, this one works for me? And you were able to kind of like feel that difference?
Totally. Totally. So I'll tell you what the most impactful ones were. And there are some, I'm actually not a huge supplement person these days. I've just gotten to a point in my path where I'm feeling really good. I'm feeling really balanced. I still take supplements from time to time, but I'm not in like a healing crisis where I'm taking a lot of them. But sure, the ones that were the most helpful to me along my path were different B vitamin formulations. This is another thing that goes hand in hand with depression and anxiety. I had pernicious anemia. I had low B12 and low iron. And so B vitamin supplementation was really crucial to me, usually in the form of some kind of like adrenal complex that contained like glandulars and B vitamin support. So B vitamins, also adrenal glandulars, like saved my life. You know, I experimented with several different types of adrenal glandulars, different potencies at different times, but I love me some adrenal glandulars. With the taper, it was important for me to use the support of amino acids. And I have trialed several different amino acids, some of which made me feel not very good at all. And with amino acids, it's very, my belief is that it's very, very personal and you just kind of have to test and play around. Like I, according to the paperwork and how I felt, like I should have responded well to tyrosine, but I didn't. So 5-HTP was really helpful for me during the tapering process. Liver support, I'm thinking of the NTP favorite of beta TCP, enzymatic support, that beetroot concentrate, that was super, liver support was super helpful for me. And supplements to support blood sugar stabilization. Like I was on Bioglycoside Forte for ages. I don't take it anymore, but that one, just the blood sugar stability, the B vitamins, the adrenal support, I use that one with clients a lot. I would say those are, and minerals for sure. Especially magnesium and trace minerals made a huge difference for me.
That's great. Yeah. Oh man. So many people don't realize how important minerals are in the whole game. You know, it's like they're not in food anymore. So, I mean, unfortunately, if you have a mineral imbalance or if you are just completely deficient in a lot of minerals, and if stress is a big part of your life, then you're going to be deficient in a lot of important minerals. They're huge. Personally, I just started back up on the Bioglycoside Forte, and, you know, I hate to be the one that like, that like promotes a specific supplement, but that is a, I'm taking it for a specific reason. And I think that's how it should be taken. It's got a lot of amazing stuff. That really does help with blood sugar regulation. And I've seen it in people I've worked with as well.
Yeah. I try not to promote specific supplements either. And I always, usually when I give my clients supplement recommendations, I try to say like, here's the budget thing you can do. And here's like the thing that you should do if you can afford it. But there are certain products that like you just can't find equivalents for. It's like, well, that formulation, like you can't really replace it with another line, or there's not really a budget option. Right. Like that stuff's gold. And I would put Bioglycoside among those for sure.
Yeah. Especially in like the B vitamin market. I mean, it's like you got people buying B vitamins from Walmart, you know, and it's like, how come this stuff doesn't work? I don't know. Does it work? I don't know. It's probably not working. It's because it's probably not, it's mostly not B vitamins. It's mostly other stuff.
Right.
You were talking about the tyrosine, and I find that really interesting because I've read a lot about like amino acid therapy and using amino acids to, you know, balance your neurotransmitters. And the logical progression is that tyrosine and phenylalanine make dopamine. So if you're depressed, it's like, well, get more dopamine. And I've actually recently learned this, which is you have an enzyme. There's an enzyme reaction from the time you have the, tyrosine gets turned into dopamine, and then it has to turn into norepinephrine. So a lot of times we're being told like, hey, if you're depressed or like adrenaline junkies or people who are alcoholics or drug addicts, you know, that a lot of people will say, well, you need more dopamine, but what they actually need is more norepinephrine because it takes you a lot to get excited. So a lot of us have these genetic SNPs that I believe it's called beta hydroxy, it's like beta dopa hydroxylase or something like that. It's an enzyme that converts the dopamine to the norepinephrine. So without getting too nerdy about this, what happens is if you don't have that enzyme, or if you don't have the enzyme working properly, you just start stacking up dopamine. So when you get too much dopamine, so if the dopamine's not turning into the norepinephrine, you're just stacking dopamine. You're just putting more and more dopamine in your brain. And it's like you said, it will make you feel worse. In fact, for a lot of people, that's the base of Parkinson's disease and schizophrenia and these things. You just start loading up this certain brain receptor called the NMDA receptor. And it just, you get this, it's called glutamate excitotoxicity. You just put too much in the receptor and it starts going crazy. And this is why people have these neurological problems. So it's like they just sell tyrosine out there willy-nilly. And there's a lot of people who are into things like nootropics who have heard exactly what you heard, which is just get more tyrosine, it's gonna make you feel great. And they feel legitimately worse. So that's an interesting observation you had.
I felt just what you were describing. I felt like this internal like agitation and energy that felt like a buzzy anxiety. And I felt like I had like 10 cups of coffee and it was not good.
Yeah. I mean, this is the crazy thing about supplements. You know, it's like, you gotta be so careful. You have to really understand your genetics, and you got to understand your biochemistry. And it's like, sometimes it is better to go with just a simple I'm not a big multivitamin guy, but like sometimes it's better to just go with like a pre-formulated thing, like a bioglycoside forte, or, you know, a mineral compound or something where the scientists have actually put it together for you. And they say, okay, you need this much B6, this much chromium, this much magnesium. And just take that and just kind of see what your body does.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, yeah, you can just start stacking things and really throwing things out of balance.
Yeah. And it's always good to, you know, don't start taking 10 new supplements at the same time. Like layer them on, see how you respond.
Well, that's like the good thing that we do as NTPs, right? This whole lingo-neural testing. This was my Kool-Aid, you know, when we started actually checking people and saying like, oh, you don't respond well to this. Oh my God, look at this. You went from a 10 to a 1. So what we do as NTPs is we have the ability to test certain nutrients with people in tiny amounts. You're not giving them full supplements. You're taking just a small little bit on your tongue, and you're seeing like testing the liver, testing the gallbladder, testing the large intestine, the small intestine, and seeing does the discomfort that you originally had because that organ doesn't work right, does that drop with this supplement? And this is, in my opinion, I know there's muscle testing and other ways, but as far as what I know, this is really the most reliable way to find out exactly what supplements are good for you as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a great skill set to have. It's also, it always feels like a party trick when you do it.
Because it really
the person
is, yeah,
on the table is always in a little bit of disbelief of like, how did that happen? But it's the innate intelligence of the body.
Yeah. They're like, are you pressing that still?
Yeah,
they go from stop, you're jabbing your finger in my rib, to why didn't you press harder?
Exactly. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're a nutritional therapy practitioner. How long have you been a nutritional therapy practitioner for?
Since 2015.
Okay. So you've been
like
doing
5 years.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Do you practice in Asheville, or do you practice mostly online, or?
I am completely online. My practice is totally virtual, so I don't get to poke people a lot.
You can't poke them over the phone, huh?
No, not with my finger anyway.
Ah, there you go.
Just with my mind.
Just with your mind and your words. It's amazing.
Yeah, so my practice is fully virtual.
That's great. So you also have this other skill set of hypnotherapy. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
How does that work? And how does that work over the phone? And can you hypnotize me right now?
I could, but I don't know how entertaining it would be for our viewers. And I don't know if you want to open up to your viewers in that way, to be honest.
I don't know. I might start walking around with like a chicken or something like that. I think it'd be fun. I could go viral, you know, which would be good press for sure.
Well, you just brought up a really common misconception about hypnotherapy. And I always joke and I always tell people, I'm not going to make you quack like a chicken or like fall in love with a fire hydrant or anything like that. So here, well, you're not in the United States, but here in the United States, hypnotherapy gets a really bad rap because we think of the Twilight Zone, or we think of a hypnotist that we saw in college or on a cruise ship, or something who made people do wacky stuff. But I use it for very different purposes. And it's a shame that it's gotten such a wacky rap, because it is an extremely powerful modality. And the reason that I came to it is a lot of reasons, but the biggest one is I've been in the NTP game for a while. I've worked with hundreds of clients, and something that I noticed time and time again that my clients were saying, and that I found myself saying about certain areas of my life, not for me, it wasn't particularly with nutrition, but self-sabotage in other areas of my life, is I noticed the number one thing that people said to me is, I know what I need to do and I know how to do it. So why don't I do it? I just have this block and I know I need to eat healthy, but I can't seem to do it. I can't seem to stick with it. And just people talking about self-sabotage a lot. And I just became fascinated with self-sabotage and why do we self-sabotage? And so that led me really deep into research about the subconscious mind. I spent over a year just reading like every book I could get my hand on about the subconscious mind and why don't we do the things that we say we want to do? And that eventually led me to studying hypnotherapy. And I trained with Marissa Peer, who's been rated the top therapist in Britain, top hypnotherapist in Britain. She's very well known. And, you know, before I studied the modality, I had a hypnotherapy session myself around a particular issue and was able to uncover the root causes of why I was struggling, the emotional root causes. You know, we talk a lot about physical root causes. Now what I talk about with hypnotherapy is emotional inflammation. What is the underlying emotional inflammation that's keeping you locked in a pattern? And the practice has actually made me so much more of a compassionate person, because I'm kind of a like you, I'm kind of an a-hole. I'm kind of a stickler. I'm kind of this person who's like, well, just freaking do it. Like, why don't you just do it? If you say you want to do it, just go do it. Kind of like a Gary Vaynerchuk sort of energy about me sometimes. But I've developed so much more compassion for not only myself, but for other people, because what this modality has taught me is when we are quote unquote self-sabotaging, our brain is just trying to keep us safe. Our brain is trying to protect us from something that it thinks it needs to protect us from, because it's running on outdated old programs and old stories. Like, a lot of people are subconsciously afraid to get fit or afraid to be healthy, because there may have been a point in their lives where they didn't feel safe being fit or safe being healthy. And so the modality helps us uncover, like, okay, what are the old programs a person is running on? And then using the tools that we use, we can then go in and then update that software with what they want to believe.
That's so interesting. That's so interesting, because I've read a little bit about like this whole idea of, you know, you find your home, right? Like, your home is that safe place, and it's what got you to where you are now. And maybe at one point it served you, but now you've realized not only is it not serving you, but even when you start to get ahead a little bit, you always go home, because it's like you said, a subconscious reaction.
Yeah.
The brain is just all about the brain's just all about keeping you safe. It doesn't it's like that separate part of the brain, like the subconscious. I call it now the inmates running the asylum. You know, it's like the prefrontal cortex. That's the adult in the room that knows, that makes the adult decisions, but then the inmates back here are the ones doing all of the decision making. And when you give up power to the inmates, it's like, you're going home, right? You're going back to those bad habits.
And the inmates run 95% of the show. Your subconscious runs 95% of the show. Prefrontal cortex, about 5% roughly, if we're lucky. So
Yeah. It's like that thing. It's like, I was talking to this lady the other day. She's like, I just ate a Twinkie for no reason the other day. And I was like, why'd you do that? She's like, I don't know. I was in the store. I saw a Twinkie. I ate it in the store. I'm like, why'd you do that? She's like, I don't know. I knew it was terrible for me. And I was like, I didn't know they still made Twinkies. I probably would have eaten one just because I was like, I better eat this Twinkie before I never see a Twinkie again, even though I know it's wrong. But this is what happens to a lot of people. You know, this is the way you eat. This is the lifestyle decisions you make. You're just not, you know the right thing to do, but you can't, it's so hard to fight that urge. Where does that urge come from?
Yeah. And it's really interesting when we uncover where it comes from. And people are just blown away in session. And you brought up a really good point, which is, well, I ate the Twinkie because what if I never see a Twinkie again, is what you just said. And that is something really interesting that I have seen come up time and time again with, when I do sessions for clients around weight or binge eating. Very often, not all the time, and I don't want to like plant any ideas in anybody's heads about, you know, why they might struggle with what they struggle with, but very often they either grew up in an environment where food was scarce, or their mom was a health nut and they never let them have treats. And so that drove the binge behavior when they were young, because every time they got their hands on a little goodie, it was like, this might be the very last time that I ever get this goodie. And so they just go bonkers on it. And then they keep living that pattern into their adulthood of like, well, every time there's a sweet, this might be the very last sweet I ever get to have, so I better eat all of it.
Wow. That's
amazing.
And
so in the process of hypnosis, if that type of issue comes up for somebody, I am putting into their mind, food is always available. Food is abundant. Food is plentiful. You can have whatever you want. You know you can have whatever you want. And now you are deliberately choosing healthier choices for yourself because you know that food is always there, because their subconscious mind thinks that food is never going to be there ever again.
Interesting. That just blows me away. Like how tricky the mind is with us, you know, like it really fucks with us, doesn't it?
It so totally fucks with us. And integrating this for me has been so exciting, because with the NTP skill set, which is amazing, and I still use my NTP skill set all the time, but you can be sitting there with your client and she comes to you every single session and she's like, yeah, I ate 4 Twinkies again yesterday. I don't know why. And she has this subconscious program running of like, you need to eat all of the sugar or you will never get sugar again.
Right.
Like, there's no supplement in the world that can fix that.
Right. Yeah. Because even if you do stabilize your blood sugar, you still have that program running. Like, well, I should probably go eat some Twinkies, even though I'm not even craving them. I just know that, you know, in the back of my brain, they're just not going to be there. And of course, of that.
Totally. And I've had that happen with clients before. Like a particular client comes to mind, like she was eating pristine. Her blood sugar was like really nice and stabilized. And she was at this for like a month and a half. And like, she'd gotten to like a pretty darn solid place, eating very clean. She felt like she was off of that roller coaster, and then boom, she just cracked and went on a binge, and it turned out to be an underlying emotional thing for her.
Yeah. I also like the idea of gut bacteria playing into that. Specifically fungus and candida really like hijacking, because that stuff goes to your brain, you know, the candida, you know, makes these different, I don't know, microorganisms or something that, and it, you know, it all it's like, are we making serotonin or not in the gut? Is it going to the brain? You know, this connection between the gut, brain, what's happening with the fungus, the candida, mold plays into it and drives people crazy. I'm starting to figure that out now. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you already have that kind of seed of pre-program instability, and then you start putting these other things on top of it, yeah, it's very easy to lose control.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, this has been really interesting. I know we're kind of running up against the time here, but this was super, super interesting. If you want to kind of leave us with any kind of, you know, final thoughts or, you know, any kind of wisdom, you know, from your side of things as an NTP and a hypnotherapist, you know, what would you tell people who are entertaining this idea of holistic health, holistic mind and body, but don't really know where to start?
Yeah, just start where you are and do what you can. And I think one thing that I would leave people with, I've been kind of on this bent lately, so I'll leave you with this, is the number one thing that I see that keeps people from being successful with any sort of health change is the thought and the belief that it's not happening fast enough. Change isn't happening fast enough. So I'm a week into my new protocol. I'm a month into my new protocol, and I'm just not seeing the results that I want. and the results that you like, you probably want to lose 50 pounds. Like you, that's not going to happen in a month.
Right.
So the thought that it's not happening fast enough produces the feeling of frustration and defeat, produces the action of, fuck it. I'm going to just go eat whatever I want, produces the result of change never happens. And so if you want to be successful with any kind of health change, the best thing to do is to move away from the thought of it isn't happening fast enough, to just taking it one day at a time and celebrating your wins as you move along. Because if you don't celebrate your progress, you're the 95% of the jerks in your brain that we were talking about earlier are going to hijack you. And they're going to pull you away from your goals because they're always going to tell you that it's not happening fast enough.
Yeah, I 100% buy into that. That's something I'm working on personally. Just celebrate the little victories. You know, sometimes you might take a step back or a step forward, two steps back. But as long as you're continuing to take steps forward and you're trying to take steps forward, that's where it really counts.
Mm-hmm. It's all about, you know, it looks a little bit like a staircase. But it's all about, are you making an upward trajectory over time? Like, are you moving the needle in the right direction over time? It doesn't matter if it bounces around a little bit.
Yep. That's amazing. Holly Fisher Higgins, thank you so much. Where can we find you online, your podcast, your social media? If somebody wanted to work with you, where would they go?
Absolutely. So I hang out on Instagram a lot. You can find me there at Holly Fisher Higgins. I have a podcast called Mind Speak, which is, I love doing my podcast. So come find me on the podcast world at Mind Speak. My website is hollyfisherhiggins.com. I've got some free downloads there. I've got a free diet and depression quiz. I have a free subconscious self-sabotage ebook and audio download. So yeah, best places to find me are my website, Instagram, my podcast. I'm on Facebook, but I never really check it. So
it's a war zone places. Out there.
Oh, it is. I just don't go on there very often.
That's good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Holistic Nootropics podcast. Holly, this was great. I learned a lot. I know our listeners learned a lot, and hopefully we'll have you back on someday.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.